What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today's topic is so important to me and should be important to everyone out there who is selling. And that topic is trust. We have a huge trust deficit going on out there. I mean, it's kind of been going on for a while with customers not trusting salespeople and prospects, you know, don't really know what to believe when salespeople are pitching to them. But it's just even bigger than that now. We used to trust brands, but now we don't because we don't even know sometimes who's behind it or what's going on. And now with AI, we don't even know if that information that that company is putting out, you know, is accurate or if someone stole their brand and put that out or, you know, if that's the real person even talking in the video. So trust has become a huge issue, but all of us in sales know it is the key to everything, to getting started, to working through the sales process, to closing a deal, to retaining a customer. So I am so excited today to have Ari Galper on the show with me because he is a trust-based selling expert. Welcome, Ari.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
So just before we dive into the topic, tell everyone, you know, what you do and who you serve and what the results are.
Sure. So my name is Ari Galper. Obviously, I specialize in trust-based selling, but that's about 2 decades now. I can't believe it. I'm actually based in Sydney, Australia, but I'm actually from the U.S. And specialize in essentially closing the long sales cycle gap by focusing only on deep trust, more of a doctor-patient construct. We'll talk about that today. And also the whole issue around the trust recession that you kind of alluded to there. But spent 2 decades working on this with my own languaging and phraseology, work with CEOs and sales teams to kind of shorten the sales cycle and stop chasing what I call ghosts. People will say, I want to think about it and never call you back.
And so who do you serve? What size company and any specific industry?
Typically entrepreneurs who have their own sales teams. We're selling CEOs. People actually are on talking to new opportunities. We aren't just the white tab at the office. Look at the numbers, but are on the phones, on Zoom, talking to real people, and are just chasing a lot of opportunities. And they're doing what they're told to do, but it's not effective anymore like it used to be. And the conversion rates are kind of dropping. So those are the folks who really more low volume, high margin businesses because every single one counts.
And are you providing training or coaching or a combination of both?
Yeah, so it's consulting, it's training the sales team, it's reculturing their business model in terms of how to think about the way they approach the market. So it's a lot of one-on-one work. It's customized for every single company. We do what I call in-deal coaching. They'll bring their pipeline and the recordings. We actually watch the recordings live together. And even I make calls for them to their clients. So we do lots of fun together.
Oh my gosh, that sounds great. And it's something I hadn't really thought about, but listening for trust. So you have a call recording and we listen for lots of things, right? When we're listening to call recordings, but actually listening for trust. When yes. I said that, how did that sound? Did they show me that they trusted me in their answer? I think that's so interesting. So everyone out there, that was a quick tip. Start listening for trust. But okay, so we're going to jump in here and really dig into trust because it's like, what does that even mean anymore, right? With AI and everything else flying out around there. And how do you know who to trust and how do you know what to trust? And trust is not like a given, like, okay, now I trust you forever. You can lose that trust at any time, and especially in a sales process. Now, you and I are both experts in a complex sale, which has a long sales cycle, lots of dollars takes, lots of people on the selling team, lots of people on the buying team, lots of technical complexities of all kinds. And so we have to maintain trust over time in our yes. selling. So, all right, what do we do, Ari? What's the first thing that CEOs need to know about trust in order to help their entire sales team be able to focus on that customer, and even just asking that question, do our customers trust us?
Correct. Well, let me drop a few bombs here. The first thing would be that that trust can be built without an actual relationship with someone. It sounds very contrarian, but we're taught to become almost like a peer, get to know them, have them like us, become friends, and over time they trust us. But there's a model we developed. You can actually build trust with someone pre-sale without becoming a peer, where you're the authority. It's more of a doctor-patient construct. Because see, the thing is, if you're focused only on a relationship building, what happens is the sales cycle is extended over time until they trust you. If you get to know somebody in real life to become their friend, it takes time for them to trust you. So our model and our concept is, there's not a lot of time in this day and age to keep somebody pre-sale in the liking you over time, because they might like you, but they may not trust you. The difference there. So our concept is, how can we build trust with somebody without extending the relationship piece? Now, once you're a client, of course, you build a relationship with them. And how you switch it over is using what I call trust-based languaging. Let me give you an example.
So rather than saying hang on, let's pause, because I think you said a lot already. Okay.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So you are saying that there is a way for me as a CEO or a seller or,
correct,
you know, founder-led sales to build the trust before I've ever even talked to the person.
No, you can position yourself for sure in advance of the first conversation. But once they get to you for that first, say, Zoom consultation, you don't have to work hard on the rapport building, relationship building. How's it going? Nice to meet you. What do you do? That sales stuff that everybody knows like a mile away, they can sense it when you're trying to kind of do the sales process with them. The way to shift it to be more problem-centric, we're really diagnosing with empathy, bedside manner. And you're really going what I call down the iceberg with them and helping them understand the depths of their situation. Like going to a doctor, right? First thing it says to you is, what does it hurt? And does a diagnostic with you. Now, it's done with warmth, hopefully, but there's less sort of dispensing the medicine in advance. So it is a more of a separating yourself from being the pharmacist and from being the doctor. Because sometimes you try and be both and their best friend all at once for them to kind of feel like,
I see.
Let's get.
Yeah. Well, here, you know, people always say, oh, they have to know you, like you, and trust you. I have never agreed with that. They do have to know you, or you're not even in their, you know, their world, right? They have to know you and they do have to trust you, but they don't have to like you. And
very good.
Right? I think that's a good example with a doctor, because sometimes we go to doctors, yes, because they're expert at the thing that the pain that we have.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter whether I like them or not, right? But I think it's interesting because to get started, the know you part is important. And if you are consistent online or wherever they find you, that does build some trust, because they're like, oh, that, yep, person consistently talks about these things and they consistently show up. And so, okay. It's like before you go to the doctor, you ask all your friends, oh, who did you go for your knee, yep, replacement?
Yes.
And then you read some reviews or something like that. So you do have some, you know them and you have some trust in them. They can spoil that in a minute, but you get into that conversation. And then you're saying in that first conversation, you have a chance to really build trust by cut the chit chat and the,
yes,
usual rapport building that salespeople are,
yes,
taught to do. And let's get to the point and get to their pain, what they need, what they see, and then be able to provide some insight.
Correct, without all the old school sales behaviors of trying to become their friend first.
Right.
So, like, here's how you do it. Okay, I'll give you an example. When they show up on Zoom, first opportunity, they probably saw who you were on LinkedIn. First thing you say to them is, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you as well. That's it for chit chat. Okay. Then you say this, if it's okay with you, John, if you wouldn't mind, take a step back for a moment. Walk me through your background, your situation, and your current challenge you have around whatever your sales team, and we'll go from there. Would that be okay with you? Take your fingers like this over your mouth, sit back like a doctor, and go like that, like a therapist. But over your mouth so you don't talk.
And these days, too, because we can get so much information from the internet and maybe even talking to others that may know this person if it was a referral or something like that, we really can start with, yeah, tell me about like the trigger event, the thing that we know and heard about, and how that's impacting. Like, we can start with a really great question that just gets them talking about it.
Yeah, because they are testing you. They want to see if you're going to try and sell them something. They're hiring you on your approach first before your solution. They're very alert to how you are with them. If you try to do the chit chat thing and you start to shift to your solution model and your case studies, they know right away, okay, he's got an agenda. He's got to, over my agenda. So the
Yeah, be
real
like,
key
hey,
is
let me show you how I'm going to fix your knee. Wait. Do I don't even know if my knee needs fixing yet.
it's hard because most CEOs are solution centric. They love what they do. They believe in their product. They cannot, once they qualify somebody, they can't wait to tell them all about what they've got because they want to solve the problem. They're being the pharmacist too early in the process. They got to be patient, stay calm, and stop trying to solve the problem too early. Instead, go
Yeah.
down the iceberg, unpack and peel back the onion
I
there.
mean, I must say it several times a day. Let's stop selling and start helping, right? I can't sell you anything until I even know what you need, but I'm trying to sell it to you because you kind of look like some other people I've sold this to, right? Well,
Exactly.
so if I can take a minute, right, and start to learn and then formulate some ideas in my head that I can share with you versus trying to sell you a product or service, right? I'm going to gain your trust because, like, oh, like she's actually cares about me and she's giving me an idea. That's fantastic.
Beautifully said. You cannot make assumptions. Just because they're qualified doesn't mean they're committed to want to solve their problem. So you have to go really deep with them in that first conversation using trust-based languaging to be able to do that.
Yes, trust-based languaging. All right, so let's talk about that. So we get on and we do very minor chit chat. Hi, you are great. Let's dive in. I'd like to, ask you about this. Okay, so we get that first question underway. Then
Yeah,
what?
then they tell you what their problem is. Okay, they're talking and talking. You have to listen very quietly. Don't try and solve the problem. Be present. Like I said, that's it from me if you're not. Once you're done talking, here's what you do. You crystallize and summarize the core issues. You say, so what I'm hearing from you is your core problems are X, Y, and Z. Is that right? And they go, exactly. Tick box number one. He's listening. Next question you say is, how long has it been a problem for? Next question. What have you done so far on your own to try and resolve it? Okay. And you go through a series of questions below that, even things like this. What is the what I call COI, cost of inaction? What's it costing them not to solve it? Reverse engineer the problem itself, help them see the impact of it. So you might say, have you thought about what it's costing you right now? Not to deal with this. Have you thought about what's costing you psychologically at home with your whatever your solution, whatever the problem is, you help them monetize the actual problem itself. Otherwise, they can't justify writing you a check to want to solve it. So it's very counterintuitive here because we're trying to help them understand the full gravity of their own situation. Once you get there, the last question, go ahead.
Yeah. I've heard there's a little danger in that lately. There's a lot of people who are disagreeing with that method. Used to be the COI or the challenger kind of way, like, oh, so what do you think it's costing you? And understanding that buyers are really overwhelmed, I would sort of tiptoe around there or maybe phrase it in a little bit of a different way. But I get what you're saying. At some point, you've got to get them to realize they actually have a problem. But they probably wouldn't be talking to you unless they did. It's kind of interesting, but
Oh no, they definitely have it, but the challenge is they often don't understand the full impact or this 360 view of it.
yeah.
They see it in a prism, not the full impact of it. So
Yeah.
we're not trying to challenge them here. We're trying to get them to open up about the
Just
full
give me the
context of the
story,
scenario.
tell you what's happening and what the misery is in it, or
The truth.
what
That's
they
the goal, the
feel
truth.
like they could be doing if only, right? If only this worked, my gosh, we could really grow our company. And here's the other thing, Ari, that I just, you and I see it every day. That's one person. there are five people in this deal that I have to talk to. And each one of them has different pain from it. Some people see it as trouble. Some people see it as growth. They all look at their problem with their own perspective. It is impacting them in a different way. And one of them might be like, yeah, no big deal. I mean, we could keep going the way we're going. The other one like, no way, we have to change, right? And now you've got to first of all, you've got to build trust with each one of them and listen to their story, right? Then you have to get them all on the same page together, still trusting you. Like, we don't want two of them trusting you and two of them going, yeah, I'm not sure about that, Alice, because that's not going to work either. So we're having to build trust with multiple buying influences and maintain that trust.
That's why it's key to build a business case with that first contact from the beginning. That becomes the anchor all the way through the process, because without that anchor and the business case behind it, it doesn't really stick very well. If someone else comes out and says, well, it's not that big of a deal. Really? Well, John said you're losing $100,000 a month. Are you sure, you guys? So it's just a way to kind of keep the conversation and process centered around the problem itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So you've talked to several of them and heard from them each. And by being a good listener, summarizing it really well and getting them to give you more, you know, you've got a pretty good idea of what's going on. So what happens after that?
Well, then you'd ask them, is this a priority for you to address and resolve as soon as possible? Or is this a next year type of project? Where are you guys on the timeline for wanting to address this?
And pause there, because that is so big, Ari. Because like you said, salespeople chase and chase and they think people are ghosting them. It's like, no, it's not a priority for them. That is why they're not getting back to you. They're not ghosting you. They have other things to do, and answering your email is not important to them because they're not doing that right now.
Correct. So if it's not a priority, then it's not, don't chase them. But that's an important question everybody misses, to ask that one question: is this a priority and what is your timeline? Now, let's assume he or she says to you, yes, this is a serious issue, you want to address it. Great. Then you say this: may I walk you through our roadmap process for how we go about addressing your issue? It's not a demo, it's not your solution, it's not your case studies, but a visual roadmap, left to right, kind of a flow chart that shows them, it's a meta step, what your process is to go about addressing it. So phase one might be discovery assessment. Phase two might be analysis.
I'm going to pause you for 1 second, because there's one thing I throw in even before I do that roadmapping.
Yeah.
I say, so it's a priority. Are there any competing priorities that are going to get in the way? Mm-hmm. Because it may be a priority to them, but also the company, if it's big enough, is working on some of these other things, which could get in the way of their project.
That's kind of like, are there any roadblocks that we should talk about in advance before we pursue this process, or the things that might get in the way? Absolutely right. Very good. That clears the beachhead, so to speak. In the beginning. And then you hopefully, most people have a process, but they don't visualize it. Your process has to be in a visual tool, like a roadmap. A quick example: when I used to go on site to visit with a lot of teams in the beginning pre-sale, I'd bring this along with me. It's a tube I had under my arm. We'd be in the conference room and we get to the point where we'd ask that question, is it a priority? And I'd say, yeah. I'd say, may I walk you through our process? They go, sure. I'd pop this little top off the top of this thing, and out would come my physical roadmap. It was laminated extra large, and I laid it on the conference table, and I'm not kidding you, Alice, every head went like this. What is that? This is our roadmap, phase one, phase two, phase three, and they're enthralled by this thing, as simple as it is, and I'd say, what are your thoughts on the roadmap, everyone? And they start talking about, yeah, it makes sense, sounds good, and then you kind of slowly onboard them into a next step inside your process, which they are buying in advance because they can see around the corner, they can understand what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful way to bring up the roadmap. And it's so important, because even though that roadmap may change a little or be customized, whatever, these basic steps have got to be done, right? Sure. And what happens today is salespeople don't get it, that people don't know how to buy from you. You think you're going to show up and sell them something and they know how to buy it, but they do not. They have no idea. First of all, they may have never purchased anything like that before in their entire life, right? Or maybe it's been years since they bought something like that. And they, even if they've bought something similar to it in the not too distant past, they didn't buy it from you. And they do not know how to buy from you. And it is your job to make that easy, right? Take the friction out and show them clearly the steps to getting the solution that is best for them. It looks like this.
Well said, because they're often in shopping mode. Their mindset is shopping around for solutions, not knowing how to, quote, onboard, how to buy. You're right. If you don't provide the construct on top of their process, you'll be inside their process and they're going to make
you chase
them. And that'll
be a mess. Their process is a mess. But not only that, and I hopefully your roadmap does this as well. A lot of times salespeople will say, well, this is what it will take, you know, for you to buy. No, I need the whole process. Once I've purchased, what will happen, right? What's the onboarding? What's the ongoing? It's the whole life cycle that needs to be shared. And then if you have, you know, 102 steps, you can't put them all on your roadmap. You need to put the big pieces on, right?
Yes. If they have to agree to the process map in advance of the next step, if they don't, we exit, we leave them. Because if they don't follow the process, they're going to drop off. They're going to fight it. They're going to make us chase them. So the key is saying this languaging, which is, once you've shown the roadmap, you don't say, do you have any questions? You say, what are your thoughts on the roadmap process? And they usually go, makes sense. And you say this, where would you like to go from here? And on their own, they say, well, why don't we start with the next step? Sounds good. So you're not trying to move them forward. They on their own are buying because you're creating enough space for them using the language where they feel comfortable with you, because you're not attempting to move them forward overtly.
Yeah, well, I think that what you want is for people to buy, not for you have to continuously sell them, right?
Right.
And that's what we talk about, the buyer journey or the buying process, because that's really what salespeople are there to guide. They are there to guide that buying process. And again, the people buying from you don't know what that is. They know some of the things they have to do inside their company to get something purchased, but they don't know the exact steps. And usually, you know, the things we sell today are pretty complicated. And they need to know that at this point, yes, IT will have to get involved and it's going to take a little bit. And then maybe the contract's going to have to go to legal. Do you have a legal department? How do you usually handle that? Like, what are the places where things might get stuck and you may not get what you need on time if they do get stuck there?
Yeah, look, complexity equals mistrust. Simplicity equals trust. If you can lay out the roadmap in advance to them, it looks, makes sense to them, and it feels like it's doable, then they'll trust you. If it's too complicated and you're talking about your stuff all the time, they'll say to you this phrase, which is so common, which is, I like to think about it. You're like, oh, okay. You chase them afterwards and they ghost you.
Yeah. Well, they're thinking about it. It takes time. But yeah, we got to stay out of that place for sure. So CEOs who are out there doing some of the selling, maybe they're managing their team that's selling, or maybe they're managing the managers that are managing the team that's selling. What do they need to know to get this started at their own company?
Okay, so the first tip I'm going to throw out here is I'm going to ask every CEO listening to remove one key word from a vocabulary and never use it again after today. And here it comes. It might hurt just a bit. I'm going to ask you all never again to use the word follow-up as of today on your phone calls or emails ever again. Okay? Because follow-up is a sales word. And follow-up means you're moving things forward. Here's what you say instead. I'm just giving you a call to see if you have any feedback on our previous conversation. Any feedback. So small languaging in itself for your sales team can make a huge difference when you're trying to re-engage people. But the goal, to, if you're training a sales team, that you have a team underneath you, is to, like you said earlier, is to essentially, the big picture is stop selling, build trust instead, which is a whole separate skill set that you talked eloquently about too as well. And the key is to be problem-centric, not solution-centric. It's so easy for reps to, in their mind, qualify and assess so quickly, they size them up and they go right into the next step in their process without going down below that iceberg down to the point of saying, is it a priority or not? So the real key is having your people get comfortable with the idea of not solving it too quickly, but just staying inside the problem as long as they can until they hear the magic phrase, which is, how can you help me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes a lot of patience.
Right. It does take patience, and it doesn't happen on one phone call usually. Correct. And it doesn't happen with the first person you talk to necessarily. And it may happen when there are three or four or five or eight people on the call with you, and you've got some of your team on the call, and you know, there's lots going on. And I think today, it's always been true, but today for sure, we need to have patience in sales. It's a long game. Unless you've got a transactional sale, you know, copy your paper. When it runs out, got to buy more, right? Unless you're doing that. If you're in a, you know, a complex sale where there's high dollar stakes and we're, you know, multi-year licenses, just doesn't happen overnight. And people say, oh, it's a 12-month sales cycle. You're probably lengthening your own sales cycle because you're not approaching it properly, but it does take time, and people are in contracts with other people, and they do have other priorities. And that's why you need to find out, oh, this is going to be a 12-month sales cycle. I know that in advance, and I'm not like, oh my gosh, it's been taking 12 months. It's the exact opposite. I knew it was going to take 12 months. They had to finish up their contract. We had to do these things. And that is where I forecasted it. So I'm not moving it every month because I'm hoping they're going to buy from me. I'm saying from the beginning, this is what they're doing. This is when their contract ends. This is what we can begin our work. And this is when the customer will be ready to buy. And therefore, I am forecasting that date.
Yeah, your roadmap has to match their roadmap as well. Because they have their own things they have to get through, milestones. You have your milestones. You have to line those two up together so everyone feels comfortable with the process. Otherwise, there'll be friction somewhere along the way, which extends the process out. And now they have to deal with that model as well. So oftentimes, long sales cycles are indicative of lack of trust because there's a lot of delays, not responding quickly to someone you don't respect or trust. So that really holds them together when you start at the beginning and get it right, versus try and catch up with later on down the road.
Okay, so in your process, for the CEOs out there who are trying to get their sales teams to adjust, stop following up. Follow up is, I'm following up because I need something, right? So you want some other type of trigger, which is, what did you think of? Or do you have any feedback on our last conversation? Something of that nature to help them respond. But of course, before we got off the last meeting, the last call, the last meeting, whatever, we should have scheduled our
Correct.
Next meeting. Doesn't always happen, but if they're actually truly interested, it will happen. And this is what
exactly.
I think it's more of the salesperson forgetting than anything else, because people who do want to move forward with you will schedule. And sometimes that schedule has to change, but get it on the calendar, right?
Yes.
And then in between, especially if it's going to be a number of weeks, we still have to communicate with them something of value.
Yes. Oftentimes the reps forget to schedule. They assume their job is a chase. And the reason why is they're missing the languaging for how to actually say it. Here's how we teach our reps to say it. You say, would you be open? That's the key phrase. Don't say interested. Would you be open? Let's schedule time on our calendars together to keep this thing process going together to avoid you and I chasing each other back and forth. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah.
Just when you say it to somebody, they go, sure, Sam, I respect you for that.
Build trust.
Respect. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So stop saying, I'm just following up. That's the first thing you want CEOs to do. Next, we got to make sure that we use the right language to make the prospects feel comfortable to schedule a next call with us.
Yes.
Okay. What else?
Some of the key phrases there are, rather say, would you be interested? You say, would you be open? Open doesn't force them to a yes or no, but it creates a comfort level for them to say, that sounds good. So some key languaging on there. So once you're onboarding somebody as in your process and they're already engaged on the calendar, that's typically when the relationship begins because you're already agreeing to your process. Things are going well. So I've often said the sales lost in the beginning and not the end of the process because trust wasn't built from the beginning. So I think if we just have folks focus on that front end, get that roadmap right, have them agree to the process for there, then they have an advantage over anybody else and they will be less shocked that way.
Yeah. And that's, something everyone needs to think about today. There's so much competition for almost every product out there. And when what you sell is so similar to what others sell, or hard to differentiate on my own, right? For me to differentiate the differences, when what you sell is so similar, how you sell makes a difference.
Correct. Absolutely right. Well said.
Yeah. All right. So, what else do CEOs need to know to help their salespeople and themselves build trust with prospects and customers
Sure.
so they can keep those relationships strong, close more deals, and retain?
Well, one tip we've been testing with our clients is something called a, when I mentioned earlier, cost of inaction, just call it C, cost of inaction visualizer. Because people can't often visualize the actual context of their problem. They understand, but can't see it in their mind. So what we're doing now is we're taking their problem that they've told the rep that they have, we're having them now create a visual image of the problem itself, which shows the customer in context their full situation. So we're using a lot of the AI tools to visualize their problem so they can see it with their own eyes versus just talk about it. So once they have a picture of the problem, they can pass it around, show their team in one visual caption. So we're now testing that to see if that works. So far, we have some good feedback on that.
Very good. And the customers are giving you good feedback on that.
So the idea is you would do a deep dive with the customer, unpack their situation, help them explain to you what their challenge is. You take the challenges, maybe their numbers, whatever their tech stack, whatever their problem is. And you create a visual image around the story of the problem. And you send it to them and say, I think I understand. Is this the problem you've got in a picture? They go, yeah, you understand us. You get us. Trust is when someone says to themselves, she gets me. She gets us. So the whole idea is to go deeper and deeper for them feeling that emotion from you because they're typically purchased, the purchase is emotional, not often intellectual.
Well, we're helping them make a good decision, right? And my good friend Brent Adamson, it wrote a book called The Frame Making Sale, and he says, the buyers lack confidence, not in you, the seller. They lack confidence in themselves to make a decision.
Exactly.
So now your job becomes helping them become confident in their decision making, and anything you can do to help them go, yes, that would be a good decision. Yes, that makes sense. So they have confidence to keep it moving forward. I think so many things stall because the whole committee will go, is this really gonna, it's a lot of work. Is it really gonna make it any better than it is right now? I don't know. It's a lot of money. Yeah, why don't we just stick with what we've got?
Yeah, indecisiveness is the enemy we're trying to battle here. Their inability to make that one decision, which takes about 3 seconds to say to you, I'm in, let's do this. It takes years to get to that point for someone to tell you that. Now, why? Because of what you're saying. All indecisiveness, not trusting somebody, but if you close those gaps, you then condense the cycle a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So now we've got this kind of cool visual that's like, hey, we get you, right? And they're like, yeah, you do. And hopefully, three, four, five, or eight, or how many people are involved are all saying the same thing. And again, throughout this, we are removing friction, removing friction, removing friction. It's amazing to me, Ari, how much friction companies put in their sales process, how hard they make
Totally.
it for people to buy from them.
I'll give you a great example of this. I had a rep the other day who's been chasing this deal for a long time, and he sent the gentleman a proposal. And I said, and then, so what's the problem? He said, well, he's not calling me back. I sent it to him. It's what he wanted. I said, why did you send it to him? I said, stop sending
Right.
proposals. Schedule a Zoom call,
Right.
show screen, open up page by page, get feedback, talk about it, and have it happen live, not in their inbox. He's like, oh, everyone just sends stuff out and waits for answers. It's crazy.
100%. Like that's one of the main things I teach my clients is do not send a proposal by email. Schedule an appointment and walk through it. First of all, design it together on the previous call, then write it up, then put it in front of them and say, is this is what we agreed to? Yes, it is. Great. Or change this or change. Great. All right.
Exactly.
We're agreed. Now I'm going to send it to you for electronic signature.
Correct.
Completely different than I sent you the proposal and now I'm chasing you to see if
Correct.
I can get an answer.
The goal should be to create a by appointment only business model where every stage of the process is like a doctor's office. It's on the calendar. It's not off the calendar. So if a CEO is running a team, your goal is to ask yourself, is my team off the calendar with their prospects or are they on the calendar? That's a huge shift for people to begin to move them on the calendar, and everything becomes more of a cadence, more easy to forecast, easier in the CRM stages. You know what's going to happen next because you can see them moving down the calendar stages.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the calendar, I live and die by the calendar, and I think that all salespeople should, because what I should see on their calendar is appointments to talk to people who can buy.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Like,
who are engaged, who are trusting you, who are agreeing to the process, right?
And you're all moving forward together. It's not the salesperson got way ahead of the buying
exactly.
team, right? So absolutely.
If you remove the chase from the process, you've won half the battle right there.
All right. Anything else really important that these CEOs need to know in order to get this trust-based selling going at their company?
I think this, the big ideas are, one, use trust-based languaging. Two, go down that iceberg, peel it back to the bottom until you get the point of, is it a priority? And three, visualize your process with them so they can see it, buy it, and schedule them. Just do that alone, those four or five milestones, and so much would shift for you right away.
Yeah. And where does the roadmap fit into there? Towards the beginning, right?
It's the beginning, on the first conversation. The first contact, you show them the visual roadmap of what your process is from here. They have to see it to believe you. They don't see it, they believe you. Because you said audibly, it goes in one ear, out the other ear. When they see it, they go, that makes sense. There's a sense of calm. There's a construct there, and there's some kind of sense of security knowing they can see around the corner in advance versus just kind of trusting your process, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, oh my goodness, it's been great. But before we end today, I have three questions for you.
Sure.
The first one is, what is a book that you think every CEO should read?
I've always had on my desk the book called 80-20 Sales and Marketing by Perry Marshall. He has a whole book on the concept of 80-20, your prism of how you view your whole process. And I use that all the time for myself, and my teams do as well.
Love that. Okay. And what's a podcast that you listen to because it helps you think differently?
Who's Diary of the CEO, you know?
Yeah.
This is a great podcast on health and business and wealth.
It's
and,
just so long.
Long walk. So
2 hours. I'm like, okay, I gotta break this one up.
I know, exactly.
But that is a good one. And he just talks to the most amazing people you wouldn't even think of, right?
He has a real way with people. I love just listening to him.
He
it's
really,
great.
Really does. Okay, last question. What do CEOs need to know to win in this market?
I think, as we talked about earlier, I think the biggest picture to think about, and the real mindset shift, is to be the doctor and not the pharmacist too early, but the real idea is to stop using any sales behaviors that connect you or your team to the stereotype everybody hates. That creates resistance. Hence what we talked about today, the no follow-up feedback, the roadmap, the doctor. So just kind of getting that construct down should eliminate a lot of resistance in the sales cycle being along.
Very good. Ari, thank you so much. I think it's nighttime for you there, right?
It's morning, Ashley.
Oh, it's morning. Morning. It's morning. I'm like, he's in Australia. What time is it there even? But thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you, Alice. Appreciate it.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.